Kia ora, everyone. Welcome back to the after-lunch session here at Webstock 2009. My name's Ben. I'm one of the Webstock organisers, and I'll be just taking us through the afternoon session here for the next three presentations. First up, we're going to have here in the main auditorium David Recordin, who is the Open Platforms technical lead at Six Apart. Now, Six Apart are well known for movable type and a very interesting company. David's had a lot to do with the Open ID initiative as well, which he's been working on since 2005. In 2007, he won the Open Source Award from Google and O'Reilly. And the really significant thing about that is actually his age. He's the youngest ever winner of this award, and he is only 22 years old, which I find really amazing that he's already achieved so much in that time. He's also a keen scuba diver, and he's come all the way from San Francisco to be with us today, so please give him a very warm welcome. David Recordin.
Thank you. Hey, good afternoon. So, let's go ahead and get some keynote going. So, power. There we go. So, the past few years, as Ben said, I've been working with technologies like OpenID, sort of going and creating a bunch of technologies which now, sort of looking back, are becoming sort of really core pieces of infrastructure as the web moves forward, as the web becomes more social, as it starts to move from sort of, I think about Web 2.0 as being able to go and collaboratively create content. And now it's you're caring about more and more things about who's creating content, who do you know, what are they doing, all over the web. But we've sort of seeing a few problems with this, of trying to go and bolt on a lot of these different sort of social interactions onto the web as it stands today. And so this has really sort of been realized, I think, the past year, 2 years, 3 years, in terms of sort of in a really tangible fashion, in terms of what can we go and do about this to try to fix it. So I want to start out with a video from a group, Data Portability, which sort of, I think, did one of the best jobs of trying to explain this problem in a way that people can really relate to.
You log into Facebook, Gmail, Twitter, YouTube, Delicious. You log into LinkedIn, WordPress, Ustream, Utters, Jaiku, and that's just the morning. Then you have to maintain your accounts. You create a profile, and another profile, and another profile. Adding your contact details, adding your friends. Adding your contact details, adding your friends. Adding your contact details, you get the message. Great, there goes half your life. Now, time to add some media. Upload your photos, your avatars, your videos, your music. Rinse and repeat, again, and again, and again. Net result, network fatigue. Your data locked up in someone else's hands. Everything's changed.
So, do you feel some of that? Yeah, okay. So, sort of some three explicit examples of things that I've seen. This is Digg's registration page from September of last year. There are about 15 fields on there. Every single one has an asterisk next to it. That is a required field. Before you can go and do the main part of Digg, going and creating your own view of what is important news, 15 fields. So how can we go and make it easier for people to sign on to websites and not have to go through this? I mean, Digg's since simplified it, but I mean, it's six-part, we're guilty of this as well. This is Vox. So once you've created an account, we ask you to go and import your friends, and we ask for your Gmail username and password, which I see two problems with. One, my Gmail password is for more than just my Gmail account. It has my credit card details, it has my advertising details, it has, now it could have my Google Health details, all of these different things. And the people that I exchange email with aren't really the people that I want to be sharing photos and all of this sort of like more private family-related blogging content with. And then using FriendFeed as an example. Robert Scoble got really obsessed with this service and stopped using everything else. He stopped blogging, he didn't stop Twittering, but he stopped using anything else, and it was just creating content within FriendFeed, which was yet another place where you needed to go if you wanted to see what Robert was doing to keep up on what's going on. So sort of how did we get here? I mean, a few years ago, this was really the status quo. Obviously, Microsoft has come a huge way since then, so this isn't a dig on Microsoft right now. But it was all about open source. It was about you were going, you had your desktop, the internet wasn't really prevalent everywhere, you were going and installing applications, you needed to have access to the source of that application so that you could continue doing what you did on your laptop, or well, your desktop every single day. We've sort of seen this shift a little bit. We saw it sort of moving into the web more and more. I mean, we had the browser wars. We had IE versus Firefox, which came around, and that really started looking at technologies with things like HTML5, Google Gears, going and being able to have features like offline functionality. How do they have their JavaScript engines? Who's running the latest version of CSS and things like that? And I think this was one of the things that really sort of changed it from really focusing the debate on open source to the data behind it. So this is something that Tim O'Reilly said in 2007 in his opening keynote at OSCON, which is O'Reilly's open source conference, that open data is increasingly important as services move online. I don't care if I want to run my own copy of Gmail, but I want access to all of my email if I want to ever leave Gmail or if I want to use it offline, anything like that. But then it's not just about being able to go and have access to my email data when I'm in front of my computer. When I'm in an airplane, I'm using Google Maps. It's going and pulling TV listings from the internet. And so you really need this data anywhere. So it's not just that you need the source code to the applications you're running on your desktop or your laptop. It's not just that you need the data that you're running in cloud services that you can access from your desktop or laptop. But now you want to be able to have access to this data anywhere you are, whether that's your computer, your phone, or a seatback touchscreen. And so you had some technologies come along which were really starting to solve these problems. I mean, you had RSS and Atom, you have semantic web technologies with RDF, you have microformats, you have OPML for going and creating listings of things like that. And sort of, I think those were a lot of the building blocks that were starting to emerge a few years ago in terms of being able to have real-time feeds of data, in terms of wanting to know what is the latest thing that's happening, being able to go and structure and mark up this data so it can be understood in different ways, being able to go and create and exchange lists of things, which is what OPML has been used for. So if we bounce into the social space, this is how I was feeling a year and a half ago. All of these social networks, all of these sites going and asking me to create an account, to find my friends, to create data. And in 2007, Brad Fitzpatrick, who originally created LiveJournal, he created OpenID, he's created a bunch of infrastructure, things like Memcache, which is used all over the web. We wrote I don't know if we weren't in the internet term, it would be called a paper, but it's a blog post, a web page, basically talking about how information that relates to social networks, social graph information, information about who I know and how I know them, needs to become decentralized. Because what we were feeling at the time, as early adopters, and I think this is now catching up much more towards the mainstream, is that this wasn't sustainable. At some point, there would be that straw that broke the camel's back. And hopefully, it wouldn't all completely die away. Because we like all of these services. We like going and sharing content with our friends. We like going and seeing what people are doing. It's just got to the point where it became unmanageable. And that's what needed to be fixed. So the history of social networks in three steps with castles is you have Friendster, which is a castle and it has a moat around it. You had MySpace, it was another castle, it has a moat around it. You have Facebook, yet another castle with a moat around it. A Friendster user can't talk to a MySpace user, can't talk to a Facebook user. I post a photo on Facebook, you can't see it on MySpace, vice versa. Three different castles, all with moats, trying to protect their users by keeping the data inside of their network. But this wasn't really, I mean, it's been sustainable. MySpace is still doing really well, Facebook's growing and doing really well, but what happened to Friendster? How many people here use Friendster? That's what I thought. So the next evolution of this, I think, was the model of Ning, where Ning went and made it so that you could have your own social network, your own copy of the castle. So it was the same castle, it was being replicated, and Ning was the one in the middle. So this meant that a user, if I already had a Ning account, I could go and sign into Jane's Ning site for the super secret dance-off. There's actually a video of dancing in the middle of crosswalks on the front page, which is worth watching. But what this meant was, yeah, this castle started to come together, but a Ning user still couldn't go interact with Facebook, couldn't interact with MySpace, couldn't interact with Friendster, and Ning was the one that was in the middle. I mean, we've seen the story before. What happened with Microsoft Passport? Microsoft was trying to be the company that was in the middle of all of the different accounts online, and it didn't work. It's not going to work in this sense either. There's not going to be one social network which rules everything. So from there, it sort of went into like social network risk. So this was about November 2008, based on Alexa data. If you actually read through what happened in there, it sounds exactly like risk. High Five gains Cyprus from Facebook. MySpace gains Puerto Rico from Facebook. Facebook gains Libya from MySpace. Facebook regains Cyprus from High Five. It goes on and on and on. And that's like real world what's going on there. And so we're having this battle between all of these social networks, sort of just trading countries back and forth, trying to go and be the dominant social network in a country. And I'm sorry, but that's the wrong model. It's not going to be what social network is the only social network in a country, what social network is the only social network in the world. It's going to be about how all of these different services interact with one another, how the websites that you're building interact with these social networks, how you're able to go and make use of data that your users which are shared between your site and a social network, how it makes things better and easier for them on the web. So around the same time, there was this notion of social applications. And my basic view on a social application is that it's sort of Unix philosophy. If you have a command, you can go and combine commands together, but each one sort of does one thing and tries to do that one thing very well. And then you have operators where you can go and take the output from one and pipe it into another application, and they create combined value. And so these are services that were really, I think, building blocks, so that you could go and be listening to music on Last.fm, but when a track really comes up that you like, being able to go and say, share this with my friends on Twitter. So Twitter and Last.fm aren't competing with each other, but there's actually much more value when you use them together. And they got into this problem because they didn't have relationship information. They didn't have social graph information. But when you're going and sending a message on Twitter, or you're going and listening to music on Last.fm, you're not really just doing it for yourself. I mean, there's some selfish side in there. When you go and update a Twitter message, it feels really good when somebody at replies you back and you know that you're being noticed and people are saying things. So you needed to have people that you know on these services. And so it was sort of a very awkward situation where these were in. And I was just out in the hall before this talking with the two Mats of Doppler, where they were sort of asking the question of how much have they done right now, is up to the latest stuff. And what we realized was that about a year and a half ago, which is when a lot of these applications started coming about, it was really easy to go and sort of be best of breed, because all you needed to do was be a little bit better than going and asking for a user's password. And so now it's gotten to the point where the past year and a half, all sorts of things have gotten shooken up, but it's starting to calm down a little more. It's starting to solidify. And those are some of the technologies and some of the things that I want to talk about in terms of trying to break down a lot of the crazy things that have been going on the past few years. So one of the solutions that came out for having these applications have access to social information beyond them just going and scraping Facebook or scraping MySpace was the Facebook platform. And so what this basically did was take a decentralized world of the web, where every site was independent and would interact with other sites, and said, run your site inside of our social network. And so you had great applications. I mean, you had Brew Social, you had Trade Your Friends, you had, I mean, like throwing sheep at each other, all of these wonderful things, which I'm sure collectively wasted far more time than anyone ever wishes to admit. But they sort of went back down that path of world domination, back to risk. It was like, what does this look like? Notice anything? I mean, mostly Mac users, but remember back to when you were using Windows, you have that start bar, getting to all the applications that you were using on your computer. Start bar for all the applications on the web if they went down their path a little bit more. Yeah? So that didn't work. Nobody was going to go and let Facebook have all of the applications or all of the social applications run on side of their platform. And that's when you saw that sort of list of technologies grow a little bit. And I mean, I'm not trying to say that these are the only technologies on the web. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to say that these are the best technologies on the web. I'm just trying to say that these are the technologies that have really interested me and that I'm passionate about over the past few years. And so you saw it grow with things like OpenID coming about. So now you could actually go to another website and have that website know who you were somewhere else. OAuth was coming about, which would allow you to not have to give away your password, but be able to grant access to protected information. XMPP, Which I think there's, Matt Bidolf just gave a talk in terms of his made of messages talk, in terms of how to be able to go and use things like XMPP for queue services and things like that. So exchanging real-time information. Open social, in terms of being able to go and take that Facebook platform and try to open source it. And not the Facebook platform itself, but go and how can we go and create 80% of what Facebook platform does really well and allow it to run across a bunch of different networks. And then sort of some more emerging stuff, portable contacts and action streams, they don't even have logos, so I went for screenshotting their websites, which I'm sure you can't read at all, but that sort of shows just how new some of these things are. So what we're seeing is this sort of evolution of technologies becoming more stable, being able to go and start combining these technologies together, and then a new set of technologies coming in and filling new problems. So being able to go and have things like a standard way to move the people that you know between sites. Because when you go and look at some of the technologies that exist for describing who you know, I mean, you have vCard and you have FOF. And neither of them have really been updated to match where the web is today. And so you also started to see people building on top of these technologies. And so this was something we did at SixApart, where going and making it so that it was easy for you to sort of have your own live stream hosted on top of Movable Type. So what you did with this was you went into Movable Type, you installed this open source plugin, you said, this is my Twitter account, this is my blog, this is my SlideShare profile, this is my Flickr profile. And your own copy of Movable Type would go and every half hour aggregate this information and show it on your site. So it gave you a way to go and start doing things that were really only being done for consumers with networks like Facebook at the time. And we've actually seen this been really successful because people want to go and take all sorts of content that they're creating all over the web and pull it back together. And so this is one of the things that's made us think about what does it mean to blog right now? I mean, SixApart, we were formed in 2001. The definition of a blog, what a blog was, remained fairly consistent. But now it's starting to change again. And so that's a lot of where I spend my time at SixApart is thinking about and going and building things. How do blogging meet social networking, go back and forth? How do we combine those things? How do we go and make a blog, which is more than just you're writing long posts all of the time? How do we take advantage of photos? How do we take advantage of Twitter updates? All of those sorts of things. So you have projects like the DZO project, and I'm really just trying to give you a bit of an overview of everything that's going on right now, and then I'll break it down towards the end. The DZO project sort of took this model of saying, okay, every website is going to become social. Every website is going to have profile information, which people are going in, ideally bringing in from somewhere else. People are going to have friends, sort of both a global list of friends or maybe multiple global lists of friends, because you might not want to have the same friends on every single site you go to. But then also people they want to interact on their own site. And they said, we should be able to go and build this in open source. We should be able to host this ourselves. So instead of having to go to a social network to have these sorts of features, being able to go and run it yourself on top of platforms like WordPress. And so what you're really seeing now is the DZO project is taking some of these building blocks and sort of evolving them more, working with these different communities, going and finding gaps. And so that's where things like the Action Stream, their Activity Streams project came out of, where they were starting to look at, okay, if I go and upload a photo on this site, how does this other site over here know that it was a photo? And this works right now because I have Flickr. I know that there are photos on Flickr. But if you were going and seeing something off of my website, off of my domain, and you can't go and hard code in there that it's Flickr and that it's photos, how would you know that it's a photo? How would you know that it's a status update instead of just if it wasn't coming from Twitter? So being able to go and add in additional metadata information to feeds to be able to say that this chunk that you see from some website is a bookmark, and you went and saved it, or you went and favorited someone else's bookmark. So really, as they're going and thinking about and starting to implement how to have social networks that are really distributed, they're finding additional gaps in the technologies, and then the communities are coming together and trying to solve them. So what we've also seen was an evolution from just technologies to projects that are looking at building these technologies together to tools for developers that start with these things. So Pinax, it's a platform built on top of Django. And if you thought about a feature list for platforms in the past for developers. It would be things like supports the latest version of JavaScript or CSS or all those different sorts of things. These guys are about social features. So it has OpenID support, it has OAuth support, it has groups, it has email verification, it has private messaging, all those sorts of things that the social networks really popularized. And now they're going and bundling them up so that a developer can go and take their platform on top of Django and build a social site using sort of the latest and the greatest and being able to have sites that aren't just creating their own silos on the web, but that can interact with each other as well. And so that's something that's really interesting to me, because I see that much more as a validation of this trend, of it's not just people are going and talking about these technologies, it's not just people are going and starting to build things with one of these technologies or two of these technologies being like, ooh, great, here's a little demo, but here's a toolkit you can go and download, which is built on top of all of them, which is built on this notion that every single website is going to be have social features, that people are going to be interacting between the sites, that people are going to be creating content, sharing content, and needing to do this in a distributed and decentralized fashion, just like the web itself. So, from things like Facebook Platform, you went and got Open Social, which was sort of the more open communities approach to how to allow people to build social applications on top of social networks. But we're sort of seeing another trend here as well, everything called Connect. And so I wrote a post about this on O'Reilly Radar last night as I was going back through my slides again and working on them and tweaking them and all of that stuff. It's like, how many different Connect products do we have right now? We have Facebook Connect, we have Google Friend Connect, we have MySpace, thankfully not Connect ID, we have TypePad Connect, so we're guilty of this too. We have products like RPX, which I'll actually show you a little bit later, which also doesn't have Connect in the name, but it's like, do you guys know the difference between these things? Facebook Connect versus Google Friend Connect, they came out like 3 days apart. The two companies were changing their dates back and forth to try to fight with each other of which came out first. No, nobody understands the difference, and that's what these guys are counting on, is that you see Connect, it's going to be cool, you're going to really love it. But the upside of this, I'll stop my hatred right there, is that it's finally getting the social networks to understand that the model is changing. The model is no longer what it was at the beginning with social applications of, I have my website and I try to scrape information out of yours by getting passwords from your users. The model is no longer that I write an application and I run it inside of the social network using Facebook Platform or Open Social. But the model is, I have my own website. It's my website, goddammit. And I'm interacting with your social networks. I'm able to go and have your users log in. I'm able to share profile information, all of those great things. And so Facebook really understands this and is probably doing it the best. They launched Facebook Connect at F8 last year. I actually participated in that and got to show off movable type using Facebook Connect on the stage at F8. And really, when I go and break something like this down, I'm looking at a few things. So Connect applications, they have profile information. They allow you to go and sign into a website using an account, a profile you already have. To be able to not have to type in your name again, not have to type in your email address again, not have to upload your photo again. They have relationship information, whatever you want to call it, so that when I go to one of these websites, I'm able to find the people that I already know there and interact with them, and I'm able to go and invite other people to join that website as well. Content. So you're no longer going and creating content in a silo like what I showed with FriendFeed. So you're not going and just creating content in one place. And I mean, FriendFeed's great. They have APIs, they have feeds, so they're just a good example right there, but they're wonderful. When I go and create new content, when I post something on CitySearch, is one of the examples I use, that restaurant review goes back to my Facebook profile. So other users on that social network of the account that I logged into see what I'm creating. Activity, that's going back to that. So when I do something, I can choose to go and share it. I mean, if you remember Facebook Beacon, that was sort of the presumption of everything you do, you want everyone that you know and maybe don't know to know what you did. That's wrong. You want to have control over that. So when you go and do something, you want to be asked, do you want to share this with your friends? And ideally being able to go and say, yes, remember this setting so you never bother me again, but being able to really give you that control. And the goal is really, I think, discovery of people that you already know, because when you're going and using these sites, think about that transition from Web 2.0 sort of being just about creating content together in a very simple form to now creating content together with people you know. So you want to find them because you care what those people are doing. You want to find new people that share common interests with you. And you want to discover new content that would be interesting to you. Because what we've seen really is that your friends can sometimes be that best filter of everything that's happening on the internet. Because generally, people are friends with people that share interests with them. And so really, if done right, you can go and build all of this on top of technologies like OpenID and OAuth and the activity streams that's coming out, the portable contacts work. And you're starting to see this happen, where this is a slide from Joseph Smar from Plaxo. And you're going and seeing MySpace and Yahoo and Google and others going and building on top of the same stack of technologies, of going and finding ways that OpenID and OAuth work together to be able to let me sign into a website and say, these are the people that I want as my friends on that website. And so far, you've seen Facebook sort of go at it alone in terms of paying attention to some of the stuff that's going on, but then still sort of being a little bit separate, using their own versions of standards, using their own code to do it, making it so that developers have to go and write something which works across MySpace, Yahoo, and Google, and something different which works for Facebook. And that was fine for a while. Facebook could get away with this because they had the only application platform when Facebook platform came out. It was, what, a year and a half before Open Social came out when there was an alternative. So Facebook had that time advantage. But what we've been seeing is that the open source community catches up. People are like, Facebook isn't going to be able to dominate this, just like Microsoft wasn't able to go and control all of identity, and they came up with a solution that's working. And this was how I ended a presentation like this in September, sort of putting out that omen there of saying, just think about what might Facebook need to do to be able to continue thriving in this sort of ecosystem. And we sort of got all sorts of different posts from people that, which I think are great, since Facebook Connect came out, saying Facebook Connect versus OpenID, things like Facebook Connect and OpenID, it's complicated, Facebook Connect, fatal blow for OpenID. And I love all these people, but I'm sorry, but this is crap. Like, you're thinking about it wrong. Because what we're seeing is that you start out with proprietary solutions, you start out with things which are centralized. It's always been that way for web technologies, and many technologies in general, because it's easier. It's easier when you're working by yourselves. And then things become decentralized over time. And so with Open Social, you have, as of last year, it was something like 350 million potential monthly active users across all of the different Open Social sites. Facebook at this point is up to about 150 million active users per month. So the potential for an Open Social application is already far greater, and it's actually starting to work. I was an Open Social hater when it first came out because I was like, it's not as easy as Facebook platform, it doesn't do as much as Facebook platform, but, well, they schooled me. So, and there are over 30 sites now where you can run applications. So if you write an Open Social application for MySpace, you can go and take a few days and it runs on Hi5, it runs on LinkedIn, it runs on Friendster, Ning, Orkut, iGoogle, Yahoo, like, it's actually starting to work. MySpace, not a social network a lot of people paid attention to for their technological innovation. I mean, I think they were an ASP.NET shop. The pages didn't look so good. I think still using tables for their layouts, all those sorts of things that developers love to hate. But they're going and they're supporting, and they're one of the biggest advocates for these technologies, and they're helping to push things forward. And then a few weeks ago, you had Facebook going and joining the board of the OpenID Foundation. Since then, they've hosted a user experience summit around OpenID. How can the OpenID user experience become better, become easier to use? And one of the things that a lot of people would criticize Facebook for was that you could only get data into Facebook. So you could put your photos in, you couldn't get your photos out. You could put your status updates in, you couldn't get your status updates out. And then they went and made two-way APIs. So I can go and find out all of my friends' status. I can go and get photos, I can get videos. So Facebook is even going and sort of changing their mentality on a lot of this from where it was a few years ago. And so you're really seeing these technologies come together and taking root, going and getting adoption, but we're still sort of, I think, very much at an interesting stage, at an early stage, where now as the individual's technologies are starting to solidify, it's about how can we use them together. Because if all that I'm doing is going and using OpenID to log into your website, you're still asking me for my email address, and you're still asking me for my photo, and you're still asking me for the people that I know. And it doesn't really solve that problem from the beginning. You want to have a solution which goes and solves all of those problems together. And ideally, one that is made up of sort of small pieces loosely joined, not trying to go and have one mammoth solution to all of this, but going and taking a few of these technologies, gluing them together, having sort of hybrid solutions, and going and finding those other gaps and creating small pieces which sort of get in there as well. So, three simple things that I think you can do to help. That if you're going and building websites, if you're going and consulting with people and they're looking for sort of that question that Matt asked me out in the hall earlier of like, are we doing the latest and greatest? What more can we be doing? Three things here. Mark up existing public data. And so what I mean by this is that if you already have a page on your site which is going and listing someone's profile information, if it's listing my name, if it's listing my email address, if it's listing what other website I have, add information to that HTML so that computers can understand it as well. Because that's really going to be sort of those seeding points of having social information that really is decentralized and distributed. And so an example of this is my website. Over on the right-hand side, there's a little bit of contact information. It has my photo, it has my name, an email address or two. I think it has where I live. Then it also has a list of accounts, which are my other accounts. And so this is saying this is my Twitter profile, this is my LiveJournal account, this is my Flickr profile, sort of all there. And then the left-hand side is just an aggregation of that all together. But I'm going to focus on the right-hand side. And so I've gone and added microformats to that. And microformats are just that simple way to go and add a little bit of machine-readable information to HTML that you already have. And so what this means is that if you go and take my URL, my website, and throw it into an API that understands it, it's able to go and look at this information and say, these are David's other accounts. So you start with my website, which is also, in my case, my OpenID. So I log into your website with it, and you're able to discover what are my other accounts around the web. And so sort of a way that you see this starting to be productized is in Google's profile screen. So this is editing your Google profile. If you didn't know you had a Google profile, I didn't for a while either. It first exposed itself via Maps, and now it's starting to make itself everywhere. But basically what they've done is as soon as I tell it my website URL, davidrecording.com, Google uses a spider to go and find this information that I've added to my page. And it gives me that list of all of those accounts there. It says, we think this is your account on Jaiku. We think this is your account on LiveJournal, your account on Dig, Twitter, Flickr. Which one of these are actually your accounts? And do you want to add them to your profile? And this all of a sudden has meant that for me to go and populate my Google profile, it changed from having to go and type in all of this information and remember what accounts I have and remember my username on all of them, but being able to just click that add button. And so really going and making it easier for me to populate profiles on new sites. So for you, when I log into your website, being able to make it even easier for me to have a profile there, not having to barrage me with 20 questions at the beginning, but being able to discover some of this information. So it's really simple, at least in my mind, but it's really simple. So XFN is one of these microformats. So this is a chunk of HTML. This is the HTML which makes my list of accounts. And the little bits that I'm highlighting right there in each line, so those are links, and I'm adding an attribute on there which says rel equals me. And this is the way in microformats, in XFN, for me to be saying that this is my Twitter account. So being able to go and add a form of semantic, lowercase s, data, to my HTML, to my website, saying that this other website is also my website. And so this is all that it takes to go and power that screen that I just showed you. So if you're going and if you're adding this sort of information to profiles of users on your site, to your own website, to your own blog, it means that you're going to be able to over time, create experiences which make it easier for other people to sign up to your service. Another one for HCard, this is all about contact information. So going and having information in there such as this is my URL, this is where I live, this is my photo, this is how to contact me. And so really, this is something where if you're wanting to know more about it, Just Google microformats, Google XFN or HCard, and you're able to go and get some more information and see sort of just how easy it is to add this information. So number two, stop leaking passwords. The number of times that I'm asked to go and put in my Gmail account password and just trust people that they're not going to do something else with it scares me. So the password anti-pattern, this was a blog post that Jeremy Keith wrote a few years ago talking about this pattern that he's seeing, but it's an anti-pattern because it's a bad pattern. And so this is going in, just having sites ask for my passwords for other accounts. And how many people use the same passwords? I mean, exactly. My uncle has two passwords. He's a retired emergency room doctor. He has one that he uses for his bank and one which he uses for everything else. Like, that's what people do. So another option was to go and have something secret. But as soon as that secret's gone, you can now post photos to my Flickr account if you caught that. So that doesn't really work either. And so this is where OAuth comes in. So think of it as your valet key for the web. And so what this means is that you're able to go and create experiences which don't require a password. And so this is my profile in movable type. And I'm going to go and connect it with FireEagle. FireEagle is sort of a location brokering service from Yahoo. So the idea with FireEagle is that I can go and update FireEagle and say, this is where I am. And that update can get pushed out to lots of different sites. I don't have to go to 20 different places to update my location. I can do it once and have all of those different places find it. So the traditional way to do this, if you think back, would have been I give movable type my Yahoo password. That's bad. That's wrong. Don't do that. If you're ever creating a screen which is like, insert your Gmail password, insert your Yahoo password, insert your Windows Live password, there's probably a better way to do it by now. And so instead I click Configure FireEagle. Movable type is like, you need to go and connect your FireEagle account. And so what this also means is that users are able to understand better what's going on. They're not just seeing you ask for my Yahoo password, you're able to create a user experience which explains to them what you're doing. I get sent over to Yahoo, where I'm asked to log in like I would for any other Yahoo account. FireEagle asks me what level of access I want to give movable type. If movable type was just taking my Yahoo password, they would have access to everything. But it turns out, I just want my website, because remember, this all gets aggregated together publicly on that website, to know what city I'm in. I don't actually want it to go and show every time that I move between blocks, and so I choose that. And now movable type knows that I'm in Wellington. Going and using a FireEagle API, which uses OAuth instead of using passwords. So number three, support OpenID sign-in. Keep your existing sign-in system too, but you really should be reducing as much friction as possible for users. And so we're able to see this. These are some very simple case studies by a company called Janrain, which is doing a bunch with OpenID, in terms of going and showing where their users are logging into. So seeing that people, when given the option in a way that makes sense, use their Google account or use their MySpace account. And so Interscope Records actually powers a bunch of different artist sites and allows you to log in using this. So I'm going to show you a quick example of an OpenID interface that doesn't completely suck on Snoop Dogg's website. A little bit Snoop Dogg set the mood. So I'm going and clicking login. It asks me what account I want to sign in with, or do I want to use an email address? I choose Gmail. I'm already signed into Google. So I come over to Google. It says, you're going to share your email address. It allows me to remember that setting. So I'm telling Google, whenever I try to log into Snoop Dogg's website, remember that. So that sends me back to Snoop Dogg's website. They want a little bit more profile information. And so this is something that's being worked on right now, so that I don't have to go and give it my birth date, tell it where I live, things like that, but being able to also move that information. And so that's something that's coming and is becoming more and more broadly supported by Yahoo and Google and a lot of those different OpenID providers. So I hit register. I now have an account. I didn't have to type in a password. I'm signed in. Snoop Dogg goes and says, hello, recording D, which is what I said my username was. I can go ahead and log out. Next time it won't ask me any of that. Google will remember that I said, yes, remember me. Let me always go and log into Snoop Dogg's website. So this time, it remembers I used Google last time. I hit sign in. I'll go to Google. I'll come straight back. And I'm signed into Snoop Dogg's website. So starting to get a little bit more mainstream and probably much more targeted towards MySpace. So been a lot of things that have been happening for OpenID the past few years, or really last year. And I want to talk about one of them, which sort of really came out this year, which was combining OpenID and OAuth, so that idea of using these technologies together. And so what Plaxo saw was that they had a much higher rate of users that actually went and created an account when they were using these technologies. And so what they did was they made sort of two-click sign up and import your Gmail address book. So what that looks like is that you start out on Plaxo, and it says, hey, your friend invited me. You're using a Google account. Sign up for Plaxo. You get sent over to a screen on Google, sort of like that one that I showed you with Snoop Dogg, which says Plaxo is requesting to let you sign in using your Google account. They want to know your email address, and they want access to your Gmail contacts. And so what Plaxo found was that 92% of the users that went through this flow finished it, created a Plaxo account, and actually was a far better experience. Because users were happier, they weren't having to give Plaxo their Gmail password. It was better for Google because, well, they had happy users and Plaxo wasn't scraping data. And it was better for Plaxo because they had a much higher conversion rate. They originally did this as sort of a test, figured they'd do it for a week. Their business people won't let them turn it off because that account creation percentage completely blows away what they were doing before. So three things: mark up existing public data, stop leaking passwords, and support OpenID sign-in. And I think those are a few of the things that will help get us towards something that's easier to sign up, easier to fill out your profile, easier to find people you know, and a more open social web. A few of us are doing a weekly video podcast called the Social Web TV, where we sort of talk about a bunch of this stuff, have guests from other different companies come and talk about it. Last week, we were two people from Facebook talking about what they're thinking about with OpenID, so really encourage you to check that out. Feel free to shoot me an email, find me, I'm around the rest of the conference, and thank you very much.